So you've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and boy, oh boy, there's a lot of paradigm shifting going on these days with infusions of higher frequency energies coming down and moving through the collective, so we have access to higher consciousness and, you know, greater empowerment and fulfillment. And Amma Bhagavan over in India has a system going where they're transmitting, and they've initiated an awful lot of people to transmit higher frequency energies and vibrations that will release our brains to open to greater fulfillment. And one of the major teachers that come from their group, Oneness University, is Stuart Mooney, and we're really privileged to talk to Stuart today. And one final thing I'll say about you, Stuart, before I give you a bit of the floor, is that Stuart's had a long history in tracking his own evolution, studying psychology, going through amazing fulfilling and expanding situations under Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, right? The Transcendental Meditation Group. And from there, just evolving like mad now with the Oneness University. So welcome to the show, Stuart.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I'm just really impressed with how you've gone through all these different phases over the last, would you say, 40 years or so?
Yeah, it all started out in 1971. I was a psychiatric intern, and I ended up having to do a study on the effects of meditation on psychiatric patients. And so I had to go and be taught by the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, became a transcendental meditation teacher. And then went into a psychiatric hospital. We did all the neurophysiologic testing, EEG, EMG, EKG, and all the other Gs.
Gee whiz, eh?
Yeah, gee whiz. We got them wired up. And we also got ourselves wired up. And we ended up doing the study on how meditation might affect the long-term outcome of patients who are having moderate to severe psychiatric problems. And it was really fascinating, and back in 1970, nobody knew a thing about meditation. Most of psychiatry thought it was akin to witchcraft or voodoo. Mm. But these early studies really turned the tide, and now techniques like transcendental meditation and other relaxation techniques are taught in regularly to physicians and psychiatrists and medical schools. So things have come a long ways.
So as they did a lot of these studies on the brain, did that affect physical healing as well? I mean, have they made that correlation in those days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when we first started, our results were so dramatic that we wanted to show them to our peers. And one of the peers we showed them to was a gentleman named Hans Selye, who coined the term stress and coined the term fight or flight. And he looked at our results and he said, you know what I'm looking at? I'm looking at basically the exact opposite response in the body, exact opposite to stress. He said, that's what the meditation technique kicks off in the brain. That's why you have the EEGs becoming synchronous. You have EMG, which is sweaty palms. The palms dry up. Lactate in the blood, and lactate has to do, it's a stress hormone, and the lactate drops off in the blood. Blood pressure drops. And anxiety level in general drops. That's why they use it for treatment of anxiety today.
Wow.
And not only that, but it impacts the outcome of illness. For instance, there are some Blue Cross insurance plans in the Midwest where if you prove that you meditate twice a day, they'll drop your insurance rate. And that's because
I've never heard of that. That is exciting.
Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
So that is fewer doctor visits and fewer hospital admissions. So it you know, works out in dollars and cents, too. And as soon as that they became aware of that, then the insurance companies and other businesses hopped on board. So, and that's just one tiny aspect, okay? So meditation is one tiny aspect of the knowledge that these people in the Far East carried. And the reason that their knowledge was different from ours is our knowledge was based on a longstanding connection to understanding thinking in the mind. Whereas the people in the Far East, the yogis and lamas and those people discounted thinking right away, and they went after consciousness itself. Mm-hmm. And they asked the question, what is it to be aware? What is it to exist? What is it actually to be awake? What is subjective awareness? They asked very, very important questions about why we're here, what is existence, and what is experience, and how do I end my personal suffering?
Good question.
Because that's the primary question that all paths are trying to answer, is why am I here, and how do I end this sense of personal suffering?
So some of those teachers will talk about hundreds of years and hundreds of lifetimes to do that, right?
Yeah, usually, well, what my teachers taught me in India was it takes about 7 lifetimes from the time you first start thinking about spirituality until you finally achieve fulfillment or awakening or a completion of the journey of your lifetimes. That's one way of looking at it. I don't necessarily buy into that. Primarily, I buy into the fact that you and I are here on this call, and on this call, I can feel your heart now.
Okay.
I can see this experience now. So to me, this experience is my truth. It's my reality. It's my life. It's where I'm living. It's what present tense is for me. So that's a primary thing that I see. Everything else, they're wonderful ideas, concepts, and stories, and they kind of make sense. I mean, lifetimes make sense. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, why we're put here now, and the things that are happening to us are happening to us if you can see it in a longer context outside of this life, then it seems to make more sense.
So is that awakening?
Awakening is not an understanding. Awakening is sensing without making sense of sensing. So basically, awakening is becoming permanently aware of where you are and who you are in this moment. So it's a sensory experience. It's not a state of understanding at all. So it's not a state based on learning. It's a state based on unlearning. every child is born awakened. Up to about 12 to 18 months old, the brain is constructed in an infant so that they are in the here and now because the brain structure's there. There's no stories, there's no language, there's just this moment. That's why the kids are having a good time and their parents are all cranky. They're thinking about Cancun in 3 months and the little kids are saying, hey, mom, dad, now, play, boy, because they get it. It's about here, now. Joy and pleasure can only occur in this moment. It's purely sensory. It's not an understanding. If you and I think about a joy or a pleasure in the future or in the past, it's a concept, it's an idea, it's a thought. It's not the same as the experience that you and I are having now. The problem is that at about 18 months old, the brain went through a natural shift. And in psychology, they would say that it went from experiential mind, the mind of an infant, to reflective mind, the mind of an adult. A reflective mind is a mind built on stories. It's built on memories. It's built on little photographs of experience that are then stored on neurons. And by the time we're 35 years old, we have millions of these little stories stored on neurons, which is important. We need memory, but the problem is that the nervous system is set up so that it throws these memories of the past and colors the present moment.
So they're like filters. They're kind of filters to the moment?
They're filters. It's like wearing past-colored glasses to see the present moment.
Oh, right. Okay.
So things are skewed. You know, you can't look at me without automatically saying, wow, he looks like Shrek, or he's not as handsome as Wayne Dyer, or blah, blah, because that's the automatic filing system throwing the past into the present.
And it's always a relativity thing to your comparative thing, isn't it?
Yes, because that's all mind is. Mind's a comparison machine. You wouldn't know a villain except, or you wouldn't know a hero except for the villain. That's just the way the mind is set up. It's set up by comparison. Even our idea of enlightenment is built on our concept of what non-enlightenment is.
Mm-hmm. So,
it's
you know, in the
comparison.
Old... You know, in the old days, we used to hear when I was younger. I'm always younger. But
I'm looking around, and everyone's younger.
Well, we used to hear that we use about 10% of our brains. So when you're talking about this, and if we get right into the present moment, like right now, in the now, the present moment, does that give us access? You know what I'm trying to say? Does that use the brain differently?
Yes.
What's the impact?
So what you're doing is you're expanding the conscious capacity of the brain to experience not only yourself, but it also allows you to experience everything, your entire world, as your own self. The way it's set up now is that we experience ourselves as limited by these bags that we live in and the length of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so what awakening does is it wipes out the separation between you and your world, between me and my world. All of a sudden, that separation that has me as the subject and my world as the object, that has me taking care of me and not me as my enemy, all of a sudden drops off. And there's a merging, a sense of oneness, an experience of oneness that takes place that can't even be conceived, because the oneness we have, if we think about it, is a oneness compared to two-ness. But this transcends both. This is purely experiential, purely sensory, and is the most fulfilling experience possible. It is the only experience of joy and pleasure in the universe that is not subject to entropy.
Aha. Oh, that's a wonderful thing to think about. So how did you tip into that? How did you discover that?
It's not really a discovery per se, you don't, because it's not like acquiring knowledge.
Okay.
Basically, what it was for me and everybody's experience of how they awaken is different, and also the quality of awakening will be different from person to person, because every person's nervous system is actually different. We're actually experiencing slightly different worlds, and those worlds are based on our genetic heritage, the experiences we had in this life, the quality of our nervous system can be very sensitive, or it can be, you know, fairly insensitive. Everybody has a different quality of experience. And the enlightenment, although you could say it's consistent to everybody, everybody's experience of that joy or pleasure or fulfillment will be different. For instance, a Christian is going to have a Christian enlightenment. They're not going to have a Buddhist version of enlightenment. They're going to have an enlightenment which is more based on love and compassion. Whereas a Buddhist enlightenment may be more focused or aimed towards emptiness, the void, this complete transcendence of limiting localized experience. It would be different based on how we were brought up, what our beliefs are, how our nervous system is predisposed. And you can see this in different saints. Some saints talk about it as light. Some saints talk about it as complete silence. Everyone has their own presentation of the awakening, but what is consistent throughout is that the separation between a person and the world drops off, and also the sense, the localized personal sense of I am, drops off. And what is replaced is a much larger sense of I am. Instead of I am the stew, and yes, I am still the stew, I'm still stewing. But there's also the experience that I cannot be stewing without stewing in this world. And what the experience is now this world is as near and dear to stew as his own self. There's a merging that takes place, and when that happens, then you have a change in how you see and relate to everybody, because you cannot help but see that every person is as near and dear to you as you are, because there is no actual separation between people, between things. Even if you look at it quantum mechanically, everything has the same source. There's only a singularity. There's a source underlying all things. That's one thing that's expressed as multiplicity, as diversity. That underlying source is kind of what is experienced in awakening. In awakening, it's just that the chatter of the mind, the narrative of the mind, no longer colors moment-to-moment experience. It's a change in the brain. You and I have talked about this. It's a change in the brain. It's a change in the relationship, basically, of seven parts of the brain.
Seven parts?
Seven parts.
Okay.
Of the brain. And these seven parts have been evolving over time anyway. For 450 million years, they've been evolving from a very narrow sense of self, which we needed to survive. That's where the ego came from. It's a survival. It's a vestige of the survival nervous system of our ancestors. We needed a limbic system and an amygdala, a fight-or-flight response, in a very close-knit identity of who we were, so that we would be strongly motivated to outrun saber-toothed tigers. So we needed those parts, and they were the primary parts that ran our brain, the amygdala and the limbic system. But over time, newer parts, around 15 million years ago, we started growing larger amygdalas. We started growing parts like the thalamus, which is our sensory nervous system. We grew the anterior cingulate, which actually made us human. It gave us human qualities like kindness, generosity, compassion, gratitude. If that part's missing or damaged in someone's brain, they'd be a sociopath.
Oh, wow.
So these parts evolved over time. The frontal lobe, if you look at the frontal lobe on Neanderthal, handsome as that guy was, he had not much frontal lobe.
Right.
Frontal lobes for reasoning is. Mm-hmm. So the frontal lobe evolved. It grew over time. And in fact, our heads are getting bigger all the time to expand the capacity. The newer parts of the brain all have to do with interpersonal relationships. The old vestige brain had to do with survival. Mm-hmm. So we've been growing interpersonal parts of the brain for millions of years. And we evolved from the point where we couldn't live in a group larger than our own clan, our own family. If we saw our neighbor coming over and the neighbor wanted to have a barbecue with us, we would immediately think, because of our amygdala, that our neighbor was coming over to barbecue us.
Right.
Because that's all we would see. That's all we would experience.
So people these days still have a lot of that absolutely inane defensiveness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we were talking about what is the cause of, for instance, the fiscal cliff that's going on now.
Right.
That deep, old sense of separation caused by the old parts of the brain, the vestige of those parts, is still there. That's why nobody can come to an agreement. And there's a sense of each side being threatened if they compromise in an agreement.
Because they've lost their eye sense in a way, haven't they?
Absolutely. And their eye sense is tied part and parcel to three parts in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's tied to the limbic, to the amygdala, and to the parietal lobe. That means those parts have to be very, very prominent for them not to be able to overcome their differences.
Mm-hmm.
The newer parts, like the anterior cingulate, like the thalamus, are all-inclusive parts of the brain. They're holistic. So they overcome this old sense of separation. What happens in enlightenment is that these six parts, along with the cerebellum, change their relationship to each other.
Hmm.
When they change the relationship to each other, a sense of separation and localized awareness drops off. Basically, the ego is located in the parietal lobe. And if you do, say, an MRI on people who are having these awakened experiences, their parietal lobe will go silent because that ego sense has dropped off. Hmm. It doesn't mean you become an amorphous blob, unless that's who you are. But what happens is that the psychological self, the whiner inside all of us, shuts up, goes on vacation permanently.
Huh.
And instead of just the automatic process of saying, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? What do I get out of it? That sense drops off. And what is left is much more, how can I help? How can I serve?
Wow.
So it's a very, very healthy process. And it's a process that actually has to happen. It's no freak accident that 2012 is happening. Because, and this shift is happening because we have to have it. We have 7 billion people who are pitted and focused on taking advantage of 7 billion other people.
That's
we
right.
We can't continue to do this. We're out of natural resources. We can't make bigger big screens. We're running out of the raw material to make the bigger big screens, the bigger Barca loungers, the bigger bottles of Bud.
The bee problem.
We can't be doing that.
No, we can't.
So all awakening is becoming comfortable in your own skin. That's another way of putting it.
And is awakening the same as enlightenment?
Well, these are technical terms.
Okay.
Okay, so awakening, we would say, is the first shift in a long process that's never ending, which is enlightenment.
Okay.
If you want to get technical, what some of the saints are saying in India, which Sri Bhagavan says, is that when somebody advances to the point where the mind completely ends, completely stops, that's actually the full version of enlightenment. The only thing is if you develop to that point, you're not going to be able to go through the Starbucks drive-thru because you're not going to be functional enough to do that.
See, we couldn't work anything.
No, that's for people who are hanging out in caves and radiating this intense grace, this intense energy. But that's not our role. What we're talking about is an enlightenment for Westerners, an awakening for Westerners, which is, it's a long-standing tradition called householder awakening.
Okay.
Or householder enlightenment. The householder enlightenment is the full awakening, the full functional awakening that any saint has in India, along with the ability to carry on life just the way you've always had it.
Well, you should think if your ego's gone, you wouldn't want to carry it on quite like you had it before, maybe, huh?
No. So what there is the momentum of the process of stew continues stewing. Because if stew didn't continue stewing, for one thing, Starbucks would go bankrupt. So that's an important point. If everybody got a monk's enlightenment, we would regress into the Stone Age very, very quickly. So we need to carry on. And as I always put it, God knows we need monks and we need those people hanging out in caves in India, but you also need people putting food in their begging bowls.
Yes.
And that is what householders do. We hold a house. We have a life. We have children. We populate the earth. We do commerce. We do all these things, and nothing outside in this world is even slightly exclusive to the experience of awakening or enlightenment. It does not, the outside world does not affect this shift. This is a shift in how you see the world. It's not a shift in behavior. You're not going to grow little angel wings and a little halo.
Oh, darn.
And a little happy face. That's ridiculous. Only a mind could come up with an idea like that. It's much more real than that. It's where every breath, every thought, every action is spiritual just by its very nature, because you're seeing it from that state. This is a scenario where you can have your cake and eat it too.
Wow, we like that. I've been involved in Oneness Blessing for about 2 years. I've been on the path for a long time. But I've noticed that a lot of things don't change and there's a lot of drama. But I'm finding I'm not awakened at all, but I find myself very peaceful, you know?
Yeah, see, it's quieting down. What's happening is the parts in the brain, the newer parts, are coming online. And so as that happens, the drama, which is basically an iSense-based drama, just will naturally settle down for no good reason at all. We're not talking about some explosive transformation where the kundalini explodes and you're in, giant vibrating light. It's more a shift into the truth that you've always been. Christ would say it's the innocence of a child. You come back to where you started. You're the person you were before you became spiritual, before you became some complex individual with all kinds of concepts and ideas. You see things with the pure innocence of a child, without sacrificing any of the intellectual skills or emotional skills that you've picked up along the way. So there's no compromise here. What there is, it's synergistic to what you already have.
Well, now, Stuart, you've been through... Pardon me? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you can... All I'm saying is that now your life, which has always been there, you can be present for it 24/7. So you can actually make the best of your life because you're no longer distracted by the mind that's creating fear, doubt, whining. Instead, it's just you here doing exactly what you need to do now without any distraction from the mind. Very efficient.
So we could, yeah, we could be a lot more efficient, eh? But you know, Stuart,
yeah.
You've had a huge, huge, very fascinating journey. I've only known a little bit of it, but it's still fascinating, going through all these stages of meditation and exploration and meeting with gurus and some very highly placed beings. And a lot of us haven't done that. Is there hope? Is there hope? Do we shave our heads? Is that what we do?
No. No. What's happening is that this is, you know, from the start, if you look back on it, for the last 5,000 years, it's been really, really hard to get enlightened, to get awakened, to become a saint, to become a yogi. It took giving up your family, your day job, all those things, and focusing on God, going to a cave, shutting out all input, and just focusing on a singular source. And a teacher would tell you to do this. They close your eyes. They want you to go in silence for 20 years and repeat some mantra like Om Namah Shivaya.
Right.
And that is because the air, the actual air, could not carry the intelligence necessary to produce enlightenment. Say you or I, we were gifted and we had enlightenment. But that's just one thing. The capacity to transmit it to another human being is very, very rare. And one of the difficulties is that as it transmits across from somebody who has it to somebody who doesn't have it, it goes through entropy. And so it never quite gets to the other person. What's happening now as 2012 has come around is that the air is now rich with the medium that transmits the quality of frequency, which is enlightenment. And so it's become, and I, you know, if you would have asked me in 2004, I would have said there's no way that more than a handful of people are going to have enlightenment in any lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But once I ran into Aman Bhagwan, the first thing I noticed when I went to Oneness University is I saw more enlightened people than I ever saw in my whole life, all in one place. And I thought, wow, this is really different. And I noticed that, I mean, it boils down to this. They have two things. First of all, they do have the capacity to transmit the frequency of awakening or enlightenment, and they've done it to large numbers of people, well over 100,000. And that's just in the past 12 months.
Wow.
And the second thing is that they have the ability to also send that quality of grace, which is enlightenment, through other people. And that's what oneness is all about. And that's what oneness blessing givers and oneness trainers do, is they transmit this frequency of Aman Bhagwan to other people through their own nervous systems. And so what's happening now is even cooler, because what's happened in the past 12 months is you needed a critical mass of around 70,000 awakened people on the earth at one time before basically awakening became viral. It now jumps from nervous system to nervous system, basically brain to brain to brain, and this just being in the presence of somebody who's awakened now, it will have a tendency to shift the brain of the person in the presence of another person who's enlightened. And this is just moving like clockwork.
That's a coherence thing?
It, Yeah, it's brainwave coherence. I call it, in psychology, we call it entrainment.
Okay.
What happens is that, for instance, if you get 10 people in a room of 100 people and those 10 people are laughing and happy, you'll have a tendency to grow through the room. And the greater percentage of the people in the room who are happy and laughing, the faster it grows through the room. In the same way, the more people who are experiencing this style of functioning of the brain, knowing full well that it was the original style of functioning of the brain that every person on Earth already had, so everybody's familiar with it, then it's like flicking on a switch. And that's been the problem. You have all of these great saints who have used all of these great techniques to bring their disciples to the door, but a switch has to be flicked to actually turn on the shift in the brain. And that's what's happening now. It's just happening. Whether you and I have this conversation or not, what's happening is a natural entrainment spreading through the planet.
Now, do you think that Amabhagavan, do you think the timing of an avatar like Amabhagavan, Ama and Bhagavan, is timed to our evolution that's happening with us as a species? I know it's kind of intellectual, but I kind of think it might be true.
No, that's perfect. That's right on. That's exactly what it is. They're an expression of us.
Okay.
They're an expression of our species. Listen, the only true enlightenment is the enlightenment of the species. That's it. As long as somebody is suffering, we all suffer to some degree.
Okay.
The only thing that individual enlightenment does, awakening does, is it's no longer personal. Yes, the pain and suffering goes on, but you can't find a person to blame it on anymore. And so it just vanishes. It goes right through you. It doesn't stick. Your experience is like Teflon. Nothing sticks. And so you're constantly being born. You're constantly in this brand new experience. I'm in Bhagavan. Are a product of timing. They're a reflection of our species ready to resolve the primary problem which keeps our species suffering. And that is the fact that we all see our world as separate from ourselves. And we see the other person as separate from ourselves. And as long as that separation this experience, we behave relative to that separation.
We are separate.
We become anxious, irritable, depressed, protective. If somebody goes into our space, we become violent.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all the symptoms of what's happening on this planet.
Well, are the neuronal connections being washed away of like memory of our stories of all these things?
Yeah, what's happening is when that electrical charge or grace passes through the nervous system, what it does is it uncouples the charges. Those charges are molecules which are stored in the neurons from events that were traumatic, that we experienced as traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of seeing through them like wearing a pair of colored glasses, what happens with the grace is the grace uncouples the resistance from those past traumas in the form of molecules on the neurons, and those molecules get reabsorbed. They just go away. And the story that was associated with the molecule goes away as the molecule gets reabsorbed. And that's what's happening now, and it's happening effortlessly. Yeah. It's just moving on its own. That's what completely blows my mind. From the process of having to work very, very hard your whole life to have any spiritual growth, now it's just in training, and it's moving on its own effortlessly. Aman Bhagwan put it this way. They say, this is happening because many, many people have worked very, very hard for many, many lifetimes, mm-hmm. doing sadhanas, doing prayerful acts to prepare themselves for this lifetime. And as they put it, listen, your job is over. All that hard work is over. Now this is just happening, and now it's part of a very automatic process that's just sweeping the planet.
Well, also, aren't there downloads of different frequencies gracing us from the universe as well?
There are a vast number of frequencies. Every teacher has a frequency. But very rarely do you have a teacher who has the full range of the frequency. And that's what the capacity to enlighten another human being is all about. It's about the broadband experience. It's like if you take white light and you break it into the spectrum, you'll see that the full spectrum is contained in the white light. Mm. And so, yes, you have great saints who, for instance, are great healers, who show great love and compassion. For instance, Amici shows great love and compassion. That's a frequency of the grace light. Mm. But to have the full spectrum grace light incorporates all of it, the full spectrum, because the ultimate freedom from suffering and pain is liberation from the sense of the person feeling the pain and taking it all personally. And most suffering and most disease is based on the I sense, on the ego, mm-hmm. on the ego not being able to cope because it thinks it's an ego, and what results is stress, and stress over time compounds itself so that you get an emotional or a physical byproduct of that stress, which is an illness. This full range grace light not only produces awakening and enlightenment, but the byproduct of that is to drop off the stress, improve health, improve the ability to manifest healthy relationships, because the healthiest relationship is where the separation between you and your spouse drops off. Mm-hmm. You and your significant other, that separation vanishes, and you see behind each of you is the same primordial source. Hmm. That's a state of oneness.
Does this work for felons in addictive situations and so on? Do you know of any stories about that?
Through my experience, I've ended up creating, for instance, prison-based meditation programs and psychiatric hospital-based programs in Canada, in the U.S., and in India. And I have plenty of stories of people who have utilized these techniques and had life-transforming results. You know, I think 40 years of that. But what's happening now is even more fantastic, because what I'm seeing as I go around the country doing these workshops is I'm seeing people shift in naturally to this state of awakening, where all of those components, relationships, manifestation, health, and also one's personal spiritual fulfillment, all get completed at once. So there's a full human being, a 200% human being, and it's just happening to regular people. That's what's blowing my mind. Hmm. And what I was saying in Bellingham was what I'm watching is I'm watching this curve go logarithmic.
Wow.
And that it seems to be doubling, 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 doubling. You know, there are only, at the start of the year, there were 5,000 awakened people in the world. By June or July and August, it had gone to 70,000. And now I think the latest number at the end of the year was 247,000. So you can sense how this is curving upwards very, very quickly.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's like this 100th monkey syndrome. You get enough people in the state, and it just automatically now appears on its own.
So this is the shift, right?
This is the shift.
Yes.
Now, going into the shift means that everything that we've done, our entire lives, has been based on an I sense, and that's okay. We needed it. But that I sense has created skewed relationships, skewed manifestation and finances, and skewed health, because it's all based on an I sense that actually isn't real. Mm. And so those things in our entire life, as this shift takes place, have to be shifted into a healthier mode of functioning. And that's why you see people who are going through deep changes in relationships and health and in finances right now. Because this has to shift, even in terms of what's happening with the physical cliff. This is just a reflection of it. The cliff that we were on was the cliff of the I sense based society. You can't have that anymore because there's too many eyes running around. Mm-hmm. So
is that the same with all the bank deceptions and the mortgage swindling and all that stuff? Would you say it's the same?
Yeah, that's all based on egos. That's a based on what's in it for me? Mm-hmm. What do I get out of it, even if I have to take advantage of someone else to get it? That's all I-based, and it starts early on. It starts when we're a child. It's reinforced to us by our parents, by society. And you can't change that by changing thinking, because thinking is based on perception, how we see things. And perception is based on how the brain works. So the first thing that has to shift is the brain. Now you have more people who are awakened than any time on Earth, and that has a definite, clear-cut impact in what's happening. All of this grace is descending onto the Earth plane, just like you were saying. So more and more of this is available to produce the shift. As the individual shifts, societies will have to shift. For the individuals to shift, it means how the individuals were basing their life will change. It will change naturally. And that means those things that were not based on life-supporting behavior, say in a relationship, it's a relationship that's based up purely on dependency. You know, you need the other person to feel good, and the other person needs you to feel good, and that's why you're together.
Mm-hmm. And you mean that'll break apart?
That will grow, okay? That has to be outgrown so that you see that you're here also to serve that other individual, because that other individual under everything else is you. Hmm. And they are you, and you are them. And that is a much healthier way of seeing a relationship. This is naturally going to evolve. This is what's happening now. And for that to happen, we as individuals will be shifting, and society as a whole will shift as a trickle-down effect. And you won't see that really happening until about 2014. Okay. Then you'll see laws enacted which are very proactive towards human rights and towards the environment. Because the natural consciousness of the species itself will be evolving. Mm-hmm. And this is going to take about 20 years to process through the planet.
Just as well.
So somewhere around 2035, the vast percentage of our species will be naturally awakened and be awakened from birth to death.
Wonderful. Tell me, you have said, others have said as well, that being awakened doesn't mean you don't suffer. We still have emotional turmoil and suffering. Is that the tool we use to awaken, to see where we're stuck?
For now, two things are of benefit. One, is to just be there and allow the grace to take place. If you want to hasten the process, you can do two things. One is to the best that you can. Remember that you're limited by the limitations of the mind, and the mind's only as good as the distance between two thoughts. If you can have your attention, say ask something bigger than you. Ask your divine, whatever you believe is your divine, to help you see and feel what's here now. Just what we're experiencing now. There's a lot going on right here in this moment. There's a palette of experience, from very pleasant and comfortable to somewhat uncomfortable, and that's just the nature of life. We spend our whole lives in Western society not feeling anything. We're all about thinking and understanding and not about feeling. Mm-hmm. And we have to favor feeling over the stories in our head, because the feeling is where the organic molecule is. That's the organic molecule, and you're feeling it. So favor feeling over thinking. Thinking's like Novocaine. It puts our ability to feel to sleep. Favor feeling and receive grace. Those are the two most important things you can do now. This is a process that is very time-limited. As I said, it's about 20 years. Even if you don't, if you've never had a spiritual thought in your life, you're time limited before enlightenment or awakening is going to shift you. It just will. And this is all about, if you look further ahead, this is about getting our species enlightened so that we can really grow. Mm-hmm. As long as we're controlled by mind and eye sense, we can't really grow, because the narrative of the mind is actually in opposition to growth. As that quiets down as a species, then we can grow as a species, and maybe that's why we're actually here. Mm-hmm. We're here to take a next step mm-hmm. as a species.
I believe that.
And to me, the next step is that everyone in the species will be a saint in their own right.
Wow.
And once everybody is a saint, that's really the starting ground for true growth.
That's wonderful.
And that's my vision. And that is the vision of oneness. Wow. That's the vision of Amen Bhagwan.
Before we're done, Stuart, tell people, that for people who are listening that don't know, tell them what the Diksha is, because I think that keys into all of what you're saying.
There is a process that every teacher has a capacity to radiate a certain grace or energy. Amen Bhagwan have the capacity not only to radiate that grace, but also transmit it through other people. And so Diksha is a process of transmitting the grace of enlightenment in a number of different forms. You can do it through hands. Say, most Dikshas are done by transmitting the grace by the Diksha giver putting their hands on someone's crown of their head, and the grace passes through. Or you could do it through using the eyes. You could even use it through sound or music. It'll transmit through the voice. So this Diksha is a grace transmission of the full frequency necessary to produce enlightenment.
And it feels wonderful. And it feels great.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yes, and even though Bhagavan, Ama Bhagavan, say we don't need to do anything anymore, it's still wise to continue with the Dikshas, isn't it?
It's great to continue with Diksha. If you have a teacher, follow whatever your teacher tells you to do. It naturally is compatible with any other process, any other technique that you're already doing. For oneness blessing people, yes, make sure you get Dikshas, because the Diksha is becoming more and more powerful. And it won't be very long before the Diksha will be probably about 3 minutes long to produce enlightenment in another individual in one shot.
Oh, wow. I'm up for that.
Yeah, so it's also with the number of people in the state, the power of the Diksha itself is becoming amplified.
Great. That's so exciting. How can people get hold of you, Stuart, or come to your next workshop or, you know?
You can always contact me at stuart@stuartmooney.com. And also I have a website, stuartmooney.com, and I'll update where the workshops are going to be next year, and I'll probably do some webinars too.
Great.
There'll be lots of different ways of interacting as we all watch this process take place.
And I want to say that your workshops are very inspiring. You get a lot of information in a short period of time, but it really moves a person. So it's wonderful to experience your workshops. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. You know, it's not me. It's Aman Bhagwan. It's just the grace. I'm the pizza delivery boy.
Starbucks drive-in.
Yeah, the mocha boy.
I thank you so much for joining us on Paradigm Shifters. And this certainly is a paradigm shift we're talking about, isn't it, Stuart?
It's awesome. It's the ultimate shift.
It really is. And thank you so much for everyone who's listening. And I think you're probably picking up some of the oneness blessing right now. Thank you so much. Many blessings.